yesterday afternoon, I had an experience which stunned me. I was stunned. I was stunning. I got in my car yesterday afternoon, left my house, backed out of my driveway into the street and started driving with the intent of going to a supermarket, which I typically do in the afternoon. It is my Disney World of food. And I'm on my way to choose my dinner selection for the evening. And as I'm driving, I feel incomplete. I don't feel whole. I feel that something is missing of great importance, and I'm not myself. I'm not myself. And as I'm driving, I start checking myself. I make sure that my pants are on. You know, some people forget to zip up their pants when they're getting dressed and they walk around all day with their fly open. I actually have to make sure that I have pants on at all. Yeah. But I'm checking. Yes, I have the pants on. I got the wallet in the back pocket. My front right pocket is where I keep my keys. They are in the ignition. They are driving the car. Check my left front pocket where I keep my cell phone. Make sure the cell phone is there. And I check it out. It's empty. Oh my God, I've left the house and am actually roaming out into the world without my cell phone. No, say it isn't so. I panic. I feel a little, panic in my body, anxiety. I can't go to the store without a cell phone. And then I'm saying to myself, Ron, what difference does it make? What you lived for decades and decades without a cell phone in your pocket. What's wrong with you? Are you chained to this communication device like a prisoner? And the answer was, yes, I am. So I stopped the car. I turned around. I actually went home, which took another like 3 minutes. Got my cell phone, put it in my front left pocket. I don't know the difference between right and left. That's a lot to ask. Put it in my pocket, got in the car, started the car up, and started back to the store. And as I did, I realized I feel complete now. I feel refreshed, as if I've just taken a shower. I feel I am complete. And everything is good with the world now because I have my cell phone in my pants. And this caused me great happiness and yet great disdain for myself. And I said to myself, I talked to myself, I actually did at that point. And I said, Ron, you're screwed up. You are screwed up. You are screwed up. You have fallen prey to the technology connection to the point where you can't exist without this thing in your pocket. That is disgusting, Ron. I hope you're ashamed of yourself. I don't ever want you to do this again. And I felt bad. Yet, I felt connected. My goodness, what would I do without my cell phone? What if I was in an accident and I shit my pants or something? I would need my cell phone. What if, oh my God, what if someone tried to contact me and I wasn't there to accept their phone call? Oh no, an important message might have come through about my hairdressing appointment. Yes, I do have a hairdressing appointment coming up, as a matter of fact.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
I've crossed the line into pathetic.
Whatever.
I have. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. I'm admitting that to you. It wasn't easy, believe me. Welcome to the program. Sit back, relax. I'll take it from here. You don't have to talk. You just shut up, and I will entertain you like a puppet on a string, like a monkey up your ass. I think I got that backwards, but nonetheless, you just let me take care of this, okay? Because most of the things that I go through, I have a feeling that you go through them probably even in a more extreme fashion than I do. And by the way, for those that know me, I'm a laid-back, very, very quiet person. This is my theatrical side. I embellish. This is the act of a cranky old man. It's the role which I play when I do this program. Thank you to Jason Shaw, who wrote our opening theme, and we play that every day. He's a wonderful man. Thank you, Jason. Usually on Fridays, Tori Lagarde joins me so I can have back and forth with a female. She is as opinionated as I am, if not more so sometimes. We miss her. She hopefully will be back with us next week. This is your Friday edition of the program that runs all weekend. So happy Friday, Saturday, or Sunday to you. Whatever. Welcome to the show. I recently, as I've said, if you've been listening to the show, and I don't expect that you have to because I don't pay you to do this, and I don't think you pay me to do this either, but we're going to talk about that someday soon. Anyway, I've been looking for a car. I have 125,000 miles on my car. I never in my life have owned a car that had over 100,000 miles on it because cars didn't used to go that long. They would kind of die at like 6,000 miles sometimes, it seemed like. They would die around 80, 90,000. Well, the life expectancy of a car, because of, technological and medical advances, now is like way over like 150,000 miles for many, many cars. But I didn't want to chance it. I didn't want to chance it. My car is running beautifully. I have a love affair with my car. And I've had sex in the back seat of it many times as well. By the way, I'm trading the car in, so maybe that information was a little too extreme. I hope the person who is taking my car as a trade-in doesn't hear the fact that I had sex in the back of my car, because that's your car now, and that's disgusting. So I'm sorry. I apologize. Can I erase this part? Nah, don't bother. Takes you more time to erase some parts, Ron, than it does just to post the damn thing and get it out of here. So I'm trading the car in today. I'm going to get myself a new car. And I'm not excited about it because I love my old car so much. And I've realized I have a love affair with my car. All right. So here are my psychological problems now in the order of which I've presented them. I cannot be disconnected from my cell phone. I can't exist without it on me and in operating condition. That's a psychological problem. I don't know what you call it, but there's some psychological problem involved there. Secondly, I fall in love with my car. I don't name cars. I don't give them names. I don't talk to my car, anything like that. But I've spent a little over 7 years with this machine on a daily basis. As I said, I've had sex in the back of her. Ooh, that sounded really wrong. I've sat in its seats every day of my life for over 7 years. I've sneezed in it. I've cried in it. I've laughed in it. I've loved in it. It talks to me because I have what they call the sync thing where, you know, your cell phone connects. See, there's a cell phone again. Connects to the car, the Bluetooth thing with the Bluetooth. As a matter of fact, I remember my dentist said to me, we were having a conversation in a dental office, and I don't go there very often, and I think the oral hygienist said to me, do you have Bluetooth? And I said, no, I brush every day. And she didn't laugh. She did not laugh. I meant that as a joke, by the way. She thought I was serious, and I didn't understand what Bluetooth is. I know what Bluetooth is. It's when you don't brush enough and your teeth start falling out and turning blue. I know that. So I have that in my car. And I have all the little compartments and things, and it reads out information to me, and I've just been very comfortable in it. It keeps me cool in the summer and warm in the winter. And when all else has failed me, my car has come through. It's taken me where I wanted to go. And with the navigation feature that I have and baked within its panels. It can take me there when I don't even know where I'm going. It is smarter than I, as is my cell phone. It's a smartphone. I'm not a smart man, but I have a smartphone. Therefore, that makes me a smart man. So I have a love affair with my car, and I'm going to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, later on today, I'm going to part with my car in order to get a new one that has 0 miles on it. And people say, Ron, that's so exciting to get a new car. Maybe it is, but I don't feel it. I feel a loss. I feel a loss of leaving my old car. And the dealership from which I bought this new car said to me, in regards to the trade-in, I said, Ron, your new car will be ready on Friday. Don't forget to bring in your title on your old car and trade in your old car, and we'll see you on Friday. And I said, okay. And as I started to drive away in my old car, the dealer yelled at me. He said, now take care of my car, will you? Referring to, I have a Mercury Sable. The last year that they made Mercury Sables, there are no more. There aren't that many on the road because they stopped like 7-8 years ago. Stopped making them. I have a beautiful one. Runs like a top. Runs beautifully. You can't even tell it's running. Sometimes I turn the key when the car's already on. It makes that noise like, you know, like, don't do that. I'm already running. That's how quiet it is. So as I'm driving away in my 2009 Sable for the last time, dealer yells, take care of my Sable now. I will. I will take care of it. It's sad, man. It's sad. We have attachments to these inanimate objects. Well, the car actually moves, though. I guess it's animate. I had a horrible experience this time around getting a new car. A horrible experience. I went to about 4 different dealerships. And you know what? It's not about looking for cars. It's the relationships that you form with their sales departments. It is that. It is that. I went to some dealerships where they were just the nicest people in the world. And I could see through their salesmanship that these were actually nice people who were trying to do a nice thing for me and get me the best price on a car that they could make me pay as little for as possible. And I could genuinely see that they were people. I might have been snowed, but I don't know. Then they did a great job. But they, you know, they shake my hand and they tell me about their personal life and stuff. And I can feel their soul coming through saying, look, Ron, I'm a guy, I'm a girl. I don't make a lot of money. This is the job I have. I don't own the dealership. I drive a car like you drive. I'm trying to help you. Some of them were like that. Some of the dealerships were like total assholes. And when I talk about a total asshole, I'm talking about a total asshole where their only function was to sell the car at any cost, belittle you, berate you, manipulate you, lie to you, make believe they're your friend when they're not. Don't ever make believe you're my friend in a phony sense. There is nothing lower than that. Don't pour your emotions into me and then throw me away like a paper towel that has just sopped up a wad of pee. Don't you dare do that to me, because I will not go quietly. I went to this one dealership, and I won't mention the name of it because I don't think it's fair and they could sue me. Because the show goes to a lot more people than I realize. And someone could go in there and say, did you hear what they said on this show that I listen, pod thing that I listened to? And then, you know, then you got cease and desist orders. And I'm not into that right now. Not at this juncture in my life, maybe later. So I walk into this dealership. They are supposed to be the largest dealership of this particular make of car in New England. And I'll tell you, it was a Ford dealer, because there are a lot of Ford dealerships all over New England, and I traveled some distance to to search my cars out here to get another car. So I walk in there, and the first thing they told me is, you know, we are the leading Ford dealership in New England. And I said, well, isn't that wonderful? Whatever. What can you do for me here? So I told them the kind of car I want, and I test drove some cars. And the salesperson was very, very, very nice. Very nice. And then when it came, and then after spending about an hour and a half there test driving cars, and we sat down and we looked at some numbers. Now, how can I tell if I'm interested in a car at all if I don't know how much it costs? I know they got the sticker thing on the window, but that's not the real price. They have incentives. They have deals. They take a certain amount off because you're a Jew. I don't know. Jews, $1,000 off this week. They have the craziest promotions. 0% financing. Financing, well, you don't, we will pay you to finance. And just all different kinds of wacky things. You know, Ron, we want to see how much your trade-in is worth. Oh, it's worth $2,000. Well, I don't know about, all right, it's worth $3,000. I got to go. I think it's, all right, it's worth $5,000. It's like, what are you doing? What, you told me, now you're playing games with me. What I hate the most about car dealerships, and they all do it, is they will sit down with you, they will give you a price for a car. And if you say yes, you are a fucking moron. Because that price is never the lowest price ever, ever, ever. And the car dealerships will say, yeah, we give you our best price when we give you a price. No, you don't. No, you don't. Don't lie to me. No, you find a way. You find a way. Don't lie to me. Ever. They give me a price and I say, that's okay. I'm going to search around a little bit. I'm going to look a little bit further. And then I get up, and the salesman says, wait a minute, before you go, let me just talk to my manager. Just wait here. And as soon as you hear that line, well, wait a minute, let me talk to my manager, you wait here, you know that the game is on. We're going to start to play games right now. And as soon as that game playing begins, I feel like, I just came in here to see what kind of prices I could get. I didn't come in here to buy a car right now today. But every time a customer comes into a showroom, the thesis is you're going to buy something or I will mentally break you down. So the manager comes over, and he's an obnoxious man, I must say. He looked obnoxious when he walked over, I must say, to me. And he says, What do we have to do to put you in this car today? What do you have to do to put me in the car today? Well, show me a picture of your daughter. Ooh, Ron, don't ever say that to a person. Kidding, I'm joking, of course. I said, well, I don't know, make another offer. I don't know. He says, how about this price? But I didn't come in here to buy a car. I'm just looking around. All right. Okay. Look. What do I have to do to make you buy this car? Says, stop saying that. Stop saying, what do I have to do? And then, of course, you do the joke that you think nobody else has done before you. And you say to the sales manager, well, Ron, what do I have to do to put you in a car today? Give me the car for free, or give me the car for $10. And everybody laughs. Well, we can't do that. I know it was a joke. I didn't expect that you would. We go through this like 4 or 5 times, and I say, look, I am not ready to buy a car today. I'm just checking around. That's all. Had I been to another place like you before I came here and they pulled the same sales tactic on me, I wouldn't have even come into this place. I would have bought the car from the other place using the same sales tactic. So aren't you glad that I didn't say yes to the other place? Well, this blew their mind. This was like, whoa, you're using some kind of psychology on us that is, we can't figure this out. Well, Ron, yeah, I guess I'm glad you didn't buy from the other place. And if they use the same sales tactics, you wouldn't even be in here to take a look at ARC. I guess you're right. My God, the customer was right about something. This is not in the book. So I said, look, I don't intend to buy today. You can give me all the prices you want. I'm not going to buy today. If I'm interested, I'll come back in a few days after I've looked at everything else. And then the sales manager actually did something that I've never really seen done before, which pissed the hell out of me. And he said, looked me in the eye and he says, you mean you came in here and spent all this time with us and you didn't intend to buy a car? And I stopped. I thought, oh my God, I'm being argued with. This man is arguing with me, trying to make me feel bad that I've wasted somebody's time. When you sell cars, it's what you do with your time. Some are going to buy, some aren't. You're getting pissed at me because I'm not going to buy a car from you because I looked at cars? That's what you do here. I said, I'm not buying a car today. He says, well, you told us when you came in that you were looking for a car. I said, yes, and I am. I didn't tell you I was going to buy a car today. Well, didn't you say that if the price was right, then we would do a deal? I said, I don't know if the price is right or not. He says, you like the car. You drove the car. I brought the price down. Is there anything? What else can we do? I picked my stuff up and I started walking out, and these people almost started chasing me. Not to that extent, but they pissed me off. And the next day, this happened about a week ago. The next day I called the sales guy back and I said, look, I don't think it's you. You're a nice guy. Your sales manager, though, is a walking asshole. And I'm not going to buy a car from your place. And quote unquote, I don't care if it's for $10, I wouldn't buy a car from your place at all. You don't treat customers like that. You don't talk to customers like that. And until you learn that lesson, people like me will never buy from you. And that was the end of the conversation. And the poor salesman said, I understand. I understand. Buying a car, going into a car dealership is you have to start wearing armor. And don't ever go in by yourself unless you're really good at it. But otherwise, my God, if you have any type of weakness or any sense of Christianity, this will not work for you. It's very intimidating. There are a few things that perplex or anger a person more than a pushy salesperson that will not let go, to the point where they will use every tactic in order to make this deal work. Well, I found a car from a dealership that is an excellent dealership that never pressured me, always respected me, always gave me a smile, made me feel like a friend, and this is who I purchased the car from. And I got a very, very good price. The price that I got the car at makes me feel very, very good. But what makes me feel even better is that I got this car from good people, from people that I trust, from a place that I trust, from a place that knows how to do business, makes me feel welcome and comfortable. And that is at least 50% of the equation. And I'll say the name of the place. I don't know if you live in my area, but it's Champion Lincoln Mazda in the city of Brockton, Massachusetts. Couldn't be a nicer group of people. And that's, again, that's at least 50% of dealing with a car, its price, and 50% the people. And I just want to give them a word. But that's a true story. Everything I said is true. Because I don't say things that aren't true unless I'm making them up.
Now that he is finally free of the constraints of terrestrial radio and into the anything-goes atmosphere of the podcasting world, we can finally say that Ron Van Dam is one badass motherfucker. What was that? What the f*** was that? Okay, that's the way it's going to be? Great. F*** you. Oh, you're listening, God, to the f***ing Ron Van Dam show on Metro South Podcasting. I didn't even say anything that time.
Look at the city, goes in the dark, where the sea. I met two women yesterday at a social function. I go to social functions even though I'm not social. It's like opposite. It's an oxymoron. Ron, come to our social function to liven the place up. Oh, here you are, but you're not lively. No, what are you talking about? What are you talking? Give me a microphone and get out of the room, and then you sit in the other room, and I'll talk to you from another room. Then I'm comfortable. But no. So I meet these two ladies, and they are, I swear this is true, they are in their 20s. Lovely young ladies. I'm introduced to them. And one of them is named Clara, and the other is named Eleanor. And yeah, I know, and I don't even know why I'm laughing. And they're adorable, lovely people, intelligent, nice ladies, well-dressed, personable, attractive, wonderful. But I couldn't get beyond their names, because anybody named Clara, to me, has to have been a character on the Andy Griffith Mayberry show. I've not met a lot of Claras in my life, and all the ones that I have met have been at least over 80 years old and had some type of horrible, horrible respiratory condition. Clara to me must be in a flowered dress where the skirt comes down to their ankles. That's got to be a Clara to me, but she wasn't. This girl wasn't. And her friend was Eleanor. The only Eleanor I've ever met in my life was the Roosevelt one. I've never met a girl named Eleanor. I've met a girl named Ellen, which might have been short for Eleanor. I really don't know. It never came out if I did. But that was it. And the only other Eleanor I knew that besides that was that song by the Turtles back from the 60s or 70s. These girls were talking to me, and their mouths were moving, and words and shit were coming out of their mouth, but I wasn't hearing any. All I heard was their two names, and it started driving me crazy. It felt like saying, why did they name you girls like this? Clara and Eleanor. By the way, if your name is Clara or Eleanor, I apologize to you for this little piece of the show, but it kind of does floor me. They are names you don't hear a lot, and you don't associate them with people like this, and I couldn't get beyond it because my brain is too small to do that, I suppose, but I could not get beyond that.
You gotta think about you. I just can't live without you. I really want you, Eleanor, near me. Your looks intoxicate me. Even though your folks hate me, there's no one like you, Eleanor, really. Let's go out to a movie. What do you say now, Eleanor? Can we? They'll turn the lights way down low, and maybe we won't watch the show. I think I love you, Eleanor. Love me.
Tell me that you love me better. know that there is one item that can not only increase your home's beauty, but its value? That would be placemats. Hello, I'm George Karanapikopoulos, owner of George K's Wholesale Placemat Warehouse, your one-stop for all your placemat needs. We have a placemat for every room of your house. That's right, placemats are not just for the dining room anymore. Anywhere you might make a spill, or maybe where you eat, like in front of the TV, I do it all the time like you. You want a placemat. We have fancy placemats, like in bamboo or teak. That's right, teak. Nice plastic laminate ones for no stains, even blue. We can custom make your placemats in as little as 2 weeks. Come to our showroom at the intersection of Route 27 and the Holbrook Turnpike. You're going to like what you see. Your placemat is waiting for you at George K's Wholesale Placemat Warehouse.
You're listening to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it too. But sometimes he says bad words.
Oh. Okay. So the economy is getting better but weird. The stock market is like incredible some days and disappointingly scary other days. So I don't know exactly understand where we are. So I thought we would speak to Rob Hilson. He's with Bank of America. And we're going to look at the economic outlook. Might have to do with the presidential elections. I don't know. Might have to do with national things. I don't know. But I don't know.
Morning, Ron.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Great. We're speaking to Rob Hilson, who's a small business executive at Bank of America. And we're talking about a survey or interview that was done recently by Bank of America about how small business owners looked at the future of the economy over the next year. And what was found, Rob?
Ron, after literally years of steadily improving confidence, yeah. The small business owners' confidence kind of hit a wall in the spring survey.
Wonderful. Well, that's not good. What was cited as some of the reasons why?
There appears to be one of the big factors is the upcoming presidential election. It appears to be weighing on the confidence of small business owners across America. 2/3 of them said that they expected the election, the presidential election, to have either a lot or some impact on their business. And specific to that, in particular, they're concerned about effectiveness of U.S. government leadership and healthcare, rising healthcare costs, and then general things about the economy, job growth, et cetera. So it appears that they're, you know, it's causing them to be somewhat tentative around hiring. There was a big jump in folks that said they would not hire over the next 12 months, 59%, and 17% said they really were unsure. So again, speaking to kind of the uncertainty as the election looms.
Okay. Rob, do these small businesses understand that a one man or one woman in the White House doesn't change the country as soon as that day occurs? I mean, to me, that seems a little odd.
Well, I think it does speak to a general concern about U.S. government leaders being able to get things done.
Yeah.
So I don't know that it points to any individual candidate, but in every survey we've done, one or two on the list of top concerns has been this effectiveness question about government leadership. And there's nothing to suggest that that's going to abate.
No, not at all. So, and in your personal opinion or professional opinion, had this not been an election year, would the results have been the same?
I don't believe so. Again, we saw a notable decline in confidence and optimism from a year ago and from the fall. So whether it relates to hiring, prospects for the local or national economy, prospects for their own business to grow, there was a notable decline. And so, I think, like we saw leading up to the Affordable Care Act, there was all this debate about that. Yeah. And once it was decided, people got on with their business and they dealt with the new reality. But right now, I think it's translating into them being somewhat tentative.
Mm. So business and business prospects are kind of sometimes more psychological than they are realistic.
I don't think there's any question. And think about this. If you look across the country, I think there are concerns that many folks have, and it can translate into job creation. It can translate into consumer spending. Small businesses, by and large, are selling to consumers, so consumer spending obviously translates into prospects for their business. And so I think all of that has people somewhat on edge.
Yeah. It sounds rather pessimistic. Is there any optimism that comes out of even pessimism?
Well, some things that were higher on the concern list have dropped. So actually, I mentioned consumer spending. That dropped down. There was some concern in the fall about, the Fed raising interest rates. That's dropped off. Access to credit is not an issue at all. In fact, so again, going back to things that would suggest that people are not as confident, only 9% surveyed said they expected to borrow, take out a new loan in the next 12 months, and that was a notable decrease from the fall and a year ago. The good news is we're not seeing that translate in our business at all. Loan volume has been very robust. Balances are growing, and so there seems to be a disconnect between what we saw in the survey and what we're seeing in our own business.
Yeah, there does seem to be a disconnect. And what does that say for surveys?
Well, scientifically relevant, we surveyed 1,000 across America and, across multiple markets. And I think it does align with some other surveys that have come out recently. Yeah. Here's what I can tell you, Ron. In spite of the challenges out there, concerns out there that come out in all of these surveys from time to time, small business owners are very confident in their own ability to get things done and to deal with whatever the circumstances are. But depending on how acute the concerns are, there tends to be sometimes, a pause, and it translates into hiring or borrowing, things like that.
Isn't it true that, at these four-year cycles, that it's, I don't know how it looked in the past, but things are always tenuous when you don't know which direction the country is going to go in. And we can even say Republican or Democrat because there are two different schools of business there. And then once a president is chosen, no matter who it is, or a governor or whatever the case may be in a business's state, then they find some direction. Of course, Trump may not be the case because there's no direction to him at all, but after an election, things seems to perk as far as confidence is concerned. Is that accurate?
I think that is accurate. And if you alluded to the previous election, I can tell you that the confidence scores are not far off. They're a little lower, but not far off where we were leading up to the 2012 election. But one caveat: in 2012, we were only a couple of years removed from kind of the worst of the recession for small business owners. We're now, 6-7 years into a recovery.
Yeah. Well, that makes us even more pessimistic because they should be more optimistic, I guess. I've always been, I guess we got a minute or two left. I've always been confused about interest rates. It's a horrible thing when you have to borrow because you have to pay higher interest rates, take out a loan, et cetera, want to buy a house or car. But at the same time, people start earning interest on their monies. The savings accounts start producing benefits and interest. Which does the sword seem to favor when we talk about higher interest rates? Is it all that terrible, or is it also good?
Well, if you're a net borrower, obviously rising interest rates are not as good for you. Right. And conversely, if you're a net saver.
Right.
But I think in general, a gradual increase in interest rates would suggest that our economy continues to strengthen,
right,
and that overall would be a good sign. And
right,
still, interest rates would be at a relatively, very relative, you know, low level.
Right.
And so it's a good environment to borrow in, and even if we do have some kind of an uptick.
Okay. Well, you certainly sound like the expert. How do we get more information about this?
You can go to bankofamerica.com, small business.
And, of course, we do say Bank of America does support small business, and it's a good avenue and route to pursue the success of a small business. So congratulations to you and your firm, and thank you so much for today's conversation.
Good to be with you, Ron. Thank you.
Take care, Rob. You know, the only good thing about Bank of America and I don't care for the big banks because they're bigger than I am, and I don't like to not have control over bigger things than I am. And I think banks are still in total control, but they do good stuff too, and they are part of our economy. We made them so. So that's that. If you don't have a credit card that has this cash back reward thing, then you're not doing anything that makes any sense. A lot of these credit cards have these cash back things where if you make a purchase on the credit card, you get money back at the end of the year or however you arrange it with them. And if you don't have that, it's like you're not making money for nothing. It doesn't make sense. I mean, some of the cards, if you purchase gas, then you get like 2% cash back. In other words, if, you know, it's $10 and you get 20 cents back or something like that. So the more you use your credit card, and a lot of people do, the more money you can get back at the end of the year. They'll actually send you a check with money on it because you've earned that amount by the number of purchases that you've made. If you don't have anything like that, get that at least on one of your credit cards and use that credit card all the time because you do get money back from them. That's something that you should know, but maybe you don't. I have no idea. I don't know what you know. I don't know what you don't know. Have yourselves a wonderful weekend. If you'd like to get in touch with me for any reason, I don't see the point. Or you can reach me by email, ronvandamshow@gmail.com, ronvandamshow@gmail.com, or go to our new Facebook page that was just created for us because I don't know a damn thing about it. It's New England Broadcasting, the Ron Van Dam Show. New England Broadcasting, the Ron Van Dam Show. I'll say it again because I screwed that up so bad. New England Broadcasting, the Ron Van Dam Show. That's the new Facebook page. Go there. Say that you like it, even if you don't. And that page has just been started, so hopefully that will build. Who knows? Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Have a good weekend. Today's show?
It was unbelievably painful.
I know.